tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
No. No. No, it's the final no.
They're there.
And I haven't read the manga, so I'm like, I'm just waiting.
Well, Dave,
I could.
Now you got plenty of time and the internet. Go for it.
Honestly,
nah, I've been waiting
for the
anime.
I would say read the manga so you don't get spoiled in the interim, because you're going to get spoiled otherwise.
Yeah,
so it's better
much.
To spoil yourself than to let other people spoil you.
So joining us.
Borrow it from the library, or borrow it from a friend, or pay for it. We do want to support the people
probably
making this so
it.
They continue
if,
to
well,
make it.
Is there an actual subtitle of the newest stuff for like that you can pay for?
No,
I don't
it's
think
all
there
fan
is.
Subs.
Yeah, it's all fan subs. All right, so joining us today, John Quick.
How you guys doing?
Katie Colin.
Hi, all my buddies.
Megan Salinas.
Hey, guys.
And I'm Dave Klein for the final episode of the first season, and I believe on the phone already. Really quick, we already have on with us J. Michael Tatum, a.k.a. Commander Irvin. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate it. And this was a big episode for your character, the final episode of the season.
Yeah, I think it was a big episode for many of the characters. Well, the ones that are still standing, anyway.
And the last episode for a few.
So you're a stated anime fan. So did you know how big Attack on Titan was before you got the role for Commander Irvin?
Oh, yeah. You know, and I think I would have been aware of how big it was even if I hadn't been an anime fan, because I had just I've encountered a lot of shows, obviously, in my time, both that I've worked on and that I've just come to because I love anime. But Attack on Titan was one of those shows that it felt like I was hearing about it from everybody, even in like your non-traditional anime circles. Like I would hear about it from a friend of a friend who, as far as I knew, had never watched an anime in his or her life. And they'd be like, are you going to get the show? Are you going to work in the show? Are you going to write in the show? And I was like, I'm going to slow down. I don't know.
Like, that's a lot of pressure.
And, so by the time I was given it to work on as an adaptive writer, I guess I've been hearing about it from just, it seemed like everybody had been talking about it for the better part of 6 months. So by the time I knew I'd be working on the show as a lead adaptive writer, when I got that call, I quietly assented to work on it and then hung up the phone and did a little cartwheel in my hotel room.
Like actual cartwheel?
An actual cartwheel. Well, I mean,
I'm impressed.
I remember it as a cartwheel. I don't know. Someone looking in on my
been,
room might call it something else, but my vanity wants to call it a cartwheel.
Yeah.
Let's go with that. I'm okay with that.
So what I'm really curious about is we've talked to a lot of voice actors on the show, but we haven't talked to any adaptive writers. So I'm really curious what that process is like for you and how you tackle it, especially on a show like Attack on Titan.
Well, it's different. I mean, it's by and large, adaptive writers are, you know, our job, and we see it as our job to try to give these incredible franchises, these shows, a home in English. You know, it's never seen as something like, oh, we're going to make this better, we're going to do this. It's just like, you know, this is an amazing concept. The original Japanese is, you know, just phenomenal. And we want to, you know, be part of it in some way, and so we know that we want to help bring it to a wider audience who might otherwise be dissuaded from watching it because of the language barrier.
Right.
So our job is basically, it's easy in the sense that it's not up to us who lives or dies, the girl or the guy, you know, it's not up to us. But we, at the same time, it's, you know, our main concern, really our only concern, is to kind of give the characters, you know, a convincing voice in a new language. And that can be very challenging because there are so many differences in the way Japanese and English work, not only on like a grammatical structural level, but also in terms of how they create mood and atmosphere, how characters use language to reveal themselves or you know, to the audience. You know, both languages, Japanese and English, have matured over the centuries into very, very different wealth of, you know, tropes and things that to each, you know, native ear just, you know, means this. Like a rose means something very differently.
Yeah.
Or it can come to mean very different things metaphorically and otherwise in English than it can in Japanese, because the two languages just approach it from a different perspective. So it's and when we're working as an adaptive writer, all we have is language. Like I said, we don't get to decide, you know, how the plot unfolds. We have to make sure that within the scaffolding, the plot structure, that the characters will come off to an English-speaking audience as real and persuasive and you know, have depth. And that can be, I mean, that's the joy of it. I mean, as a writer, I love character. That's what brings me to the table as a writer and as a reader. So character is my specialty.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it is kind of nice not to have to worry about plot. You know, it's like, oh, someone else has done all that heavy lifting. Now I can just focus on giving the characters dimension. And it comes with a challenge too, because like, especially in the case with Titan, you know, there are many times I'm like, man, if I was making this show, I love this particular character so much, I wouldn't kill them off so soon. Why? You know.
Oh, well.
Petra, no!
Really sucked into it, watching it, because, you know, you watch it as an audience member first when you're working on it as an adaptive writer.
So,
you know, my job is to go through and watch the entire series, and then suddenly I'm going, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, there, oh my god, you know, it's...
So do you actually speak Japanese and write Japanese as well?
No. I maybe speak enough Japanese to get myself into some really, really deep trouble over Japan, but not enough to be an expert, not enough to like look at a particular word in Japanese and give you like a fourth level meaning definition of it.
Is that a story behind
that? At Funimation, we have a team of translators who that's their expertise. They know not only the language, but they understand the cultural references.
Okay,
that's good. This vocabulary of imagery and, you know, poetic tropes that kind of infuse their language. You go, well, this means this, and the equivalent might be this. So we work with a team of translators who give us as close as humanly possible to a direct translation.
Yeah.
And then we work from that material to make it sound at home in English, I guess.
Because
a straight translation delivered in the booth by a voice actor rarely sounds like they're really speaking English anymore.
It
sounds, you know, strange and alien, and it kind of takes you out of the moment.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of people involved in that adaptive process. We lead writers, or we adaptive writers are just part of it.
How worried do you get, especially with how... As a show like this, fans are really into it and dig into every little bit and piece in detail. Do you ever get worried when you're working on that adaptive screenplay that there might be one small detail that, I mean, maybe three seasons later or something, just something that has more significance than you might realize that as you're adapting it might get changed in the process? Like, how much care do you take into that? And how do you ever get worried that you might somehow switch something around slightly to adapt it for our audience?
Oh, God. Yeah, it's I think I speak for most of us in this business, are painfully aware of how easy it is to misstep and get a tiny detail wrong that seems really insignificant in one place but might come back to bite us in the ass, you know, 2 years later in season four. You know, we try our best. I mean, we try to be very, very careful, and we go over the original material with a fine-tooth comb to take away, you know, like, okay, that seems... You know, that seems like they're going to do something with that. So we need to be very, very close to pay very close attention to any references. And you know, it's not as though the Japanese give us the stuff and say, have fun figuring out what we want you to do. And then we're with us too. And make sure, you know, to make sure that we don't, you know, oh, no, actually, don't do that. You know, this is, we're going somewhere else with that. I mean, that rarely happens in my experience. And luckily, just because of the way anime storytelling style works, it's rare that as a writer that I've encountered details like that gotten even slightly askew from the original translation can overturn a story. Like, it doesn't really happen, because it's most of the shows I've encountered, you know, for all their outward trappings, they're still very character driven, and as long as you're true to the character and to the extent to which and the speed at which their motivations are revealed to the audience over time, as long as you're true to that, it's really hard to run foul of the creator's original vision. And that's good. I mean, because I think it's something I've commented on before, but I think it bears repeating that, when I go to anime conventions, I have it confirmed for me every single time that this is very much a character-driven artistic industry. You know, people cosplay as characters. You know, I don't see anyone dressed up as an explosion or a plot twist.
Well, I dressed up as Shingon Shina District last time I went.
I've seen a few people dressed up like that, actually. They have the poster, and then they have the Colossal Titan mask, and when you take their picture, they just peek over the top of the poster. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that sounds incredible.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, that's really cool.
That was the one good thing about that particular con, was that cosplay.
Well, speaking of characters, when did you decide to start auditioning for the role as well? Obviously, you got the part to, you were able to get involved on the writing process. How did the audition process go?
Well, the audition process, as a writer, it's out of my hands. You know, I do, usually it works. So that the way the whole process of writing and recording works, let me kind of give you some insight into that. Generally, when recording is started, there is only about 6 to 7 adaptive scripts ready to go into the booth.
Yeah.
So once the show is cast, we continue writing, obviously, staying just a few episodes ahead of where they are in the booth. So that there's a great deal of overlap, and so I was playing Erwin and also writing the show, together at the same time for, several months. So when I started writing, as an actor, I'm so anxious of, jinxing myself or jinxing my chances of getting work that I try not to hone in on a character and go, oh, I want to play that guy. That guy looks really interesting because, it's just going to break your heart when you don't get it. And 9 times out of 10, you don't. It's just the way this business is. So I try to focus on just writing it and kind of getting my head around every character as a writer so that, I can just kind of get through the writing process. And then when I get called into audition, as everyone did, because this show has a huge set of recurring characters. I think last count it was something like 76 characters who are in more than one episode. And that includes like people that are like, just saying something on the side of the screen or something that yet come back. I mean, this is a huge cast. So I figured, I'm like, I'll probably be something in this because I don't think there are that many, I don't think there are enough North American voice actors to fill every shoe. And when I got Erwin, I was kind of surprised, because I auditioned for several parts and I didn't necessarily feel that I was right for any of them that's me as a writer speaking though, because there's nothing more stressful than working on a show as an actor that you've also been the adaptive writer on, because then you've got no scapegoat in the booth if you can't make a line work. it's very stressful. So I'm like, oh, please don't pick me. Please don't pick me. Please don't pick me. Oh, great. I'm playing Erwin. Damn it.
And, this.
And the actor in me is like, yes, I'm playing Erwin. Kick ass.
So we need a new adaptive writer in here for this.
I need to write really good lines for my character.
Although it happens every time that I would be in recording for Erwin. Mike McFarlane, the show's director, as well as Jean, would record me, and we have this very humorous relationship. We love to just pick on each other in the booth because that's just who we are. And so I'll be in there, and he'll be like, wow, I'm having trouble reading the line you wrote? I'm like, who wrote this crap? that would come up at least once every single time.
Yeah, but, nice.
But of all the characters, I could have chosen if I could have chosen for myself, I think Erwin is probably the one I might have picked for myself just because I felt like he is one of the easiest. And I don't say that out of disrespect. I just say that relative, like, he doesn't do as nearly as much screaming as everyone else does. He doesn't have nearly the line count, so it's not an intensive process. I have nothing but respect for like Bryce Papenbrook and Josh Greeley and Shane Ishimura because their line counts, but there's so much screaming, so much desperate shrill, just vocal cord shredding screaming. Yeah. And I'm like, I want the character that doesn't do a lot of screaming. I think Erwin had like one line where he had to say fire really, really loud. That was as uncomfortable as it got for me. So I think that's the role I would have chosen for myself.
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, that's a great point about that character, though. He really is one of the few characters who commands so much respect from people he doesn't have to speak of, which we don't see in this world.
He makes the lines count.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't speak much, and that makes him interesting for me to play as a human being, because I am not a man of few words. So I really have to kind of dig deep to get around this cipher of a man that commands so much respect, but on so little expression. Like, he just, it take even an audience member, you know, as the audience watching the show, it takes you some time to warm up to Erwin, I find, because you think, I don't know about this guy. He just seems kind of just like distant from everything. Like, is he crazy? Is he shell-shocked? Is he to be trusted? You know, but then, you know, there are a couple of, you know, then some big things happen, and you see how he responds as a leader in the moment under duress, and you go, okay, that's why he can get away with saying very little, because anyone that's spent any amount of time with him in battle knows that this is your pillar, this is your rock.
Yeah.
And so it's fascinating. It's fascinating for that reason, because everyone else is shrieking and running for their lives and sweating bullets, waiting for, like, the next Titan attack. Erwin is, like, alarmingly calm.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder as an actor, like, where does he go in his own mind? Where does he go in himself to draw from to get that level of serenity when he's surrounded by so much death?
Yeah, I mean, this episode we just watched is a perfect example of that, where Erwin, things seem like they didn't go so well with the female Titan in this last episode, and Erwin's called in by his superiors and still completely calm about everything, and you feel like he's got it under control regardless. But we actually do have to, speaking of the last episode, we actually do need to continue our wrap-up for our show, but thank you so much for calling in. It was so great talking to you.
No problem. Thanks for letting me ramble, guys. I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Very interesting.
It was awesome. Where can fans go if they want to find out more about you?
Nowhere. I'm a mystery. No, I'm just
kidding. A mystery wrapped inside an enigma.
I have a Twitter. It's jmichaeltatum at twitter.com, and I have a Facebook page. And apart from that, I am just kind of around. I like to be mysterious, so catch me if you can.
Okay.
All right.
See you at the con.
Thank you so much.
My name is Tom Hanks, and I will do that. All right. See you later. Thank you so much. All right. So that again is J. Michael. Catch me if you can, the movie.
Leonardo DiCaprio was actually the reference that you wanted to go with.
No, no. Wasn't Leonardo the one who was getting caught?
Yeah, he was
getting caught by Tom Hanks.
So if I'm saying I was Tom Hanks, I was searching for him who was Leonardo DiCaprio.
Dave, look how many steps we had to take to get that joke.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, that was
Megan got it right away, so.
I still feel like we need the little sound effect, the womp, womp, womp. Honestly, it's okay.
I just
tried.
To know what the story was with
that's the
Thank
one.
Thank you.
I thought it was pretty quick, and I don't care what you guys said.
I just want to know what the story was with him getting in trouble in Japan.
Yeah.
Let's be real. That's what I want to know.
Sounds like a fun story.
All right, so let's go ahead and move forward to actually talking about the episode. So we've got we've actually start with the wall here. Well, the priest of the wall, the church of the wall, essentially.
I'm so happy. This should not have been as funny as it was, but this was hilarious because we get to see Wall Church. We get to see, and we pray to the three saints and the divine architect, and they keep us safe in proportion to our worship. All hail! And then the Titan comes straight through and just massacres everyone on impact, except for the three priests who were standing there like, what just happened?
Well, they were standing off to the side.
Yeah.
Mid-sentence massacre. It was comedic timing is what this was, and that's why it was hilarious.
Well,
and
I do love death.
It was really funny last week because we had Lauren, you know, watching with us, and all of us have seen the show before, and so it gets to that part where Annie crashes into the church, and all of us are just like, ooh, because we know exactly what happened at the beginning of this episode.
Yeah. And that also gives you some insight, too, because, like, I mean, last episode when we saw the church, it didn't seem like that big of a deal. It's just like, oh, Godzilla I just mentioned the buildings thing, and this will give you insight into that's probably what's like every single time they crash into a building throughout this episode.
And they crash through like a lot of buildings.
Well, I remember when they go to that tower where she drags her fingers across the tower, we just see like military police going flying
everywhere.
They got to the market right in front of the wall and just.
Yeah,
took out all of the
bashing in the people.
Like, yep. What?
My cabbages!
Yeah, I like it. It's Avatar Last Airbender.
Nice. Thank you, thank you. I'll be here until probably about 10 minutes
from now. Oh, I'm sorry, John. I've never seen The Last Airbender, so I don't get the reference.
Well, that is your fault, Dave. That is totally your fault.
See, that was a direct reference that most people will understand.
How is that any more direct?
He gets it.
Anyway, but what's interesting to note is after she does crash into the church, she sees the kind of death and destruction and in her own way kind of tries to minimize it. I mean, she's not exactly avoiding the military police or going to avoid crashing into buildings, but she sees that and goes, maybe this isn't the best place to hang out and fight.
Hey, there's a football field or something. Let's go there.
Yeah.
But it's not like Dragon Ball Z where you can just fly to a remote desert somewhere.
To this big place on Earth that doesn't exist. Oh, look, it's right over there. That one. Yeah.
Well, when you fly that fast, it's all good. It works. So, yeah, they end up doing this chase.
She did go flying at some point.
Yes, she did.
Oh, yeah.
And as this is all happening, the scouts are trying to help the situation. Though they really can't do much. And you got the military police trying to put on their gear.
They really can't do much.
They're trying to.
I haven't put this on since college, guys. What do I do?
It's poor high school, really.
Yeah,
like junior high.
15.
It's like practicing math again. Like, oh crap, what's algebra? Oh,
how do I solve for x? My life depends on it.
I did calculus in high school.
I did too.
That
but
was murder.
Yeah,
they're just standing in the middle of the street doing it, and they did not hear the getting closer. Like,
but the thing is, it's all around them. The vibrations. How can you tell at that point?
I don't know. They do it in Jurassic Park.
They're the military police. They're drunk and stupid.
So as this fight's going on, we have on the other side, we have Niles still holding Commander Irvin hostage and still unsure what to do as he's getting this information about the Titan battle now that's going on and ending up basically questioning if he should kill Irvin or not, and Irvin just being like, well, why don't you just make up your own decision. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
I absolutely love that the guy, you know, Niles basically getting ready to murder him, and he's like, okay, you know, if that's your decision, that's totally okay. I totally accept that. You're going to be in charge in my stead. Do this and do this.
This guy's in charge of that, and here's a thing you need to know.
Right. And immediately Niall backpedals and goes, wait, no, I don't want it.
Yeah.
I don't want that responsibility.
He called his bluff, and it was beautiful. It's like, okay. You're in charge. I don't want it.
I think he was just making Niall aware of the situation. Niall was just like, I should execute you right now for doing this. Okay, but before you should do that, there's still, like, machinations going. So those kind of got to keep rolling.
There's A, B, and C going on, just so you know. Have fun with that.
It's more like
it's not
going to
be my problem pretty soon.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more like A through M, really.
Yeah, a whole lot. So after that, he decides, okay, maybe I'll just arrest you instead. And Irvin asking Levi to step back, saying, like, hey, if you die now, it'll be a pity. And Levi with a great line of just like, well, every death's been pointless.
Yeah, a pointless death wouldn't suit you. You're right. Doesn't suit anyone else either.
Yeah, so.
And that was a really good line.
Attack on Titan. Pointless death.
That's basically it in a nutshell, yeah.
I remember watching the opening theme, and I was like, hey, look at all the dead people. That's this entire series, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Look at all the dead people.
That's just the opening screen. Hey, look at all the soon-to-bes.
Well, at this point, it really is. Look at all the dead people.
So as they're all trying to figure out a scramble how to help, and Armin explained, like, hey, it's Mikasa. There's not much you can do. It's just two Titans fighting. We really can't do anything in here. In this situation, we do have Eren and Annie duking it out, with Annie at first getting the upper hand, beating the crap out of Eren as she's having flashbacks to her father training her, and we get a little bit more of her story. When Eren goes DBZ Super Saiyan.
Lights on fire.
So
he is burning with desire, both figuratively and literally.
He's just burning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... just fire. How is that possible? I mean, I guess it makes sense. Annie has, you know, ice powers randomly.
Well, and she has, like, a hardening crystal ability, but we see that, like, the Titans are naturally, like, hotter. Like, when Hanji, like, touched his, like, exposed Titan flesh, he burned her hand. So the Titans, and they have steam coming off them, the Titans' internal body temperature is just higher, and maybe it responds to emotion. So, you know, Aaron just hit combustion level.
That makes sense, actually, in its own way.
Also, I think his fangs grew a little bit. Maybe, or we just see them a whole lot.
Well, and
we just see them a whole lot.
They cease becoming teeth, and they do kind of become fangs. Yeah. They just get pointy.
He does regrow about half of them in the middle of the fight.
And, like, it's funny because his eyes are, like, green half the time, and then they're, like, really bright, like, white or whatever. He's on fire.
They're glowing.
Yeah.
His eyes are glowing, his everything's glowing, and he is full of murder.
And that's when he starts to take the hell out of Annie, so she tries to escape, and Mikasa's there to cut her fingers off. Thanks, Mikasa.
She runs towards the wall, and he goes galumphing after her on one arm and one leg, and it's like something out of a horror movie.
It's
where
pretty
it looks
great.
Human, but it doesn't move like that. It's like The Exorcist or The Ring. It's like, you're supposed to be human. What are you doing?
We're not supposed to do that.
He crunches her eyes out.
Yeah, crunches her face.
Oh, that was amazing.
Yeah,
and honestly, I think that really served to dehumanize her to the audience, because you're still thinking that's Annie in there, and you can see it in the facial structure, and you can see it in the eyes, and then he crunches her face, and she looks completely different, and she no longer has that beauty, and she no longer looks familiar.
I think
she
it's the
looks
exact
like
opposite.
A monster.
Well, she looked afraid, like, afterwards. Like,
I didn't think that was meant to dehumanize her. I think that was more to show how far, for one, Aaron was willing to go.
Yeah.
And actually, it was to get that more emotional, kind of visceral response out of the audience, because it's like, that's her face, and that hurts a lot.
I'm just talking about afterwards.
No,
every shot
I disagree. I think that's more about, like, holy crap, look at what Aaron did.
It was about that moment, yeah.
What I got out of it was more just the fear that all of a sudden imparted her after seeing it.
Yeah, because
that's
Aaron's
what Aaron
going
will
berserk.
Turn into. It's funny because I was thinking, like, well, who's the monster here in that situation? As you see Aaron screaming in his Titan inside of him, it's like he comes across far more as a monster than Annie had before.
And again, even just kind of getting to the wall, you know, she's the one trying, perhaps, you know, maybe that's not, maybe obviously escape is her main goal, but we do see her trying to, in her own way, minimize casualties, and Aaron doesn't care. He's just plowing through everything to get to her because he's just so enraged. And yeah, it's more terrifying to see him than it is to see her, because she's on the defensive. She's the one trying to escape.
Well, and the flip side of this is she has most likely had a lot more time to practice in her Titan form and have a lot more control. And Aaron, this is like, the fourth or fifth time he's transformed? He's still working on it.
Well,
and his goal was, I'm going to fight her, I'm going to kill her. So that's the one thing that's forefront in his mind.
Even though he's our protagonist, though, like, and we get his inner monologue going, you know, I'll kill them all, I'll kill them all. Simultaneously, we're getting her flashbacks, and so she's becoming more humanized as he's becoming more animalistic.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And we probably should move on really.
Sorry.
It's all good. But, I mean, we should talk about that flashback real quick, though, which is that it's Annie's father apologizing, saying, stand your ground. Even if the world is against you and they'll despise you, you'll always have me. But just that really great flashback that, again, I agree with you, humanizes her and makes it be like, oh, you see where she's coming from.
Well, it lets us know, because the whole running thing has been, like, in order to win this war, we have to abandon our humanity. And Aaron's abandoning his humanity and winning. Annie is gaining her humanity and losing. That is so depressing.
I guess that's a good point.
I'm going to cry now.
Yeah, and even when you know, he rips open, you know, the female Titan exterior and finds her underneath, she's crying.
Yeah.
She's weeping. And that's what causes him to hesitate.
Yeah, he does end up giving pause. So he still does have that bit of humanity in him, which causes him to then lose. So then he loses as she turns into crystal form and actually somehow starts merging with him or something to that extent.
I think it was the hardening technique.
Was like merging over Aaron at the same time.
Yeah.
Possibly. So it's what it does is just she ends up casting this crystal and crystallizing herself into this hard form. that basically completely preserves her, but also completely stops her from having anything. She can't get out. It seems like no one can get in. She's completely separated.
In Final Fantasy terms, she casts Shell level 5.
Yeah, but this one ain't leaving.
That's true.
Nope. But that makes me wonder if she has the power at any point to get herself out of it, or if she is literally trapped. Like, she, because obviously nobody can get in. And for all intents and purposes, she looks like she's asleep. But I'm wondering if she has the power to just sort of turn it off whenever she wants.
Yeah, that's definitely worth questioning.
I don't know if she doesn't seem like she's aware. It looks like she's just, like, basically taking the cyanide pill.
I wouldn't be surprised either way.
Yeah, at this point, it's really hard to tell. But Eren wakes up as Jean is trying to bust her out and can't get to her. And Hanji's really worried here because without being able to question Annie, that means that they lost. I mean, that's what this was all about, was trying to capture her to be able to question her. Yeah, the scouts have nothing, essentially. So Irvin gets questioned by the higher-ups about what was this all for, why should we not unsanction you, why should we exonerate you for everything that's happened. And he's being tried really hard about this, and his reasoning is... I think any audience would be like, come on, to the higher-ups.
We learned things.
Yeah.
So many things were learned.
The scouts are the only ones doing anything, but of course the higher-ups in this world are incredibly infuriating.
Well, you saw the guy's like, I'm grasping at straws to exonerate you. It's like, it's very clearly that this guy's just like, okay, I know since I'm a military guy that what you did was probably the right thing, but I gotta justify this to a lot of civilians who just watch their families die, so give me something.
And even one of the council members was like, that's not gonna fix my roof. Just saying.
Congratulations, now you know what it's like to live on the outer walls.
Yeah, yeah. No kidding, right?
I like as he said,
Deal with it.
It's like, I lost my roof. It's like, we saw so many people die. Like, there couldn't have been, it's just like, well, that's not going to bring my daughter back. It's like, this guy's like, oh, my roof.
Yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing. All the things.
It's going to take forever to re-shingle.
Yeah. I think that also highlights just how completely disconnected from reality most of this council and most of the people in the inner wall and the financially higher up are.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's the same as the merchant who way back when was trying to get his cart through and preventing people from evacuating.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it just shows just how incredibly distant it is. But,
but in fairness, it was a really nice cart.
There's also a really nice roof.
Yeah, that roof was incredible. I mean, did you see that job? That took like months. So
it was like the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah, it was incredible. They carved it out of stone. So Irvin,
why would you carve your roof out of stone?
Because if you can get it to stand up,
so it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So and then put it on top of a wood house.
Irvin pointing out...
That guy's house is probably not what it would anyway.
Right. Irvin pointing out here, though, essentially we've all moved forward by leaps and bounds, and we now know the Titans are in our wall, which is something we didn't know before, so now we know that because of Annie, and now we're going to take the initiative. So there's all these things that we've learned, essentially what you said, Kay, that they've learned so much, and now we can actually move forward from here. So this is actually great because of all the information that we got and that we've learned through all of this.
Gotta love it when you can spin a pirate victory. That's always a good day.
I mean, I say, like, it really is still, you stopped one of the inner Titans that even if they're, you didn't get any information out of them, that was one of the Titans who was against you. It's like killing a spy. I mean, it's still, I'd call it a victory if you got rid of a spy. So regardless, that's how he moves forward and gets them exonerated. And on the flip side, we've got Eren with Mikasa, Armin, and Jean as Eren explained that he froze when he saw Annie's face. And him getting some alone time with Mikasa, it's a nice little tender moment between the two of them there.
Yeah. You know, it was just really sweet. And now that we've gotten to talk to Trina, it's nice to... It's like, oh, okay, this is a brotherly, sisterly moment.
I still don't buy it!
You're allowed to ship what you like.
Trina didn't write it. Trina hasn't written it. She's just saying her perspective.
Well, Mike also told her that.
Mike didn't write it either.
He's the director.
But he didn't write it. Who knows what the writer of the manga has planned for season three?
Well, the manga doesn't have nearly the shippy stuff that the anime does, so there's also that.
I think that's mostly us shipping it, also, too.
Who's guys, us? let him ship it. It's okay.
He's allowed to ship what he likes, even if he's wrong.
Can't I just have some love in my heart?
No!
In a show.
Continue on! Throw your barge forward with your heart empty and no one to love you.
We have to abandon our humanity if we're going to cover this show.
Oh, good point. Okay, so.
Does that mean we've all lost?
I think it does. So, for the most part, that basically on that note, Jean doesn't like this fire versus fire, as Armin has to explain. He's glad that Aaron can finally do things. So, we get the final part of this episode is the wall close-up with something they didn't show in the Cartoon Network version, really, but...
They killed the stinger in the Cartoon Network version, and this was really sad. So for those of you who are watching on Cartoon Network and haven't watched this before, we're about to blow your minds.
So watch it on Hulu or Netflix where they showed it, because it was supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Inside the wall, it crumbles over, and you find out that the wall is made up of titans.
Colossal-class titans.
There are titans in the wall. Part of the wall where Annie had been climbing falls away, and you just see an eye.
And what?
That's not okay.
If you guys remember, in the opening, there is a scene where it's just like a painting on a wall of looks like massive giants, like arms out right next to each other going across. It's there for briefly. I remember seeing it. So.
Yeah. And that's the point where, you know, if you haven't read the manga and you're watching this show, where you just want to throw something at your television because it's like, end of season! End of series! And at that point, you know, season two hadn't been announced or anything. So you just want to throw something at your TV because it's like, what does that even mean?
It's like, that's it. I'm going to go read a lot of manga.
So, on that note, let's do predictions real quick for... At least I can do predictions. I haven't seen or read anything. Maybe it's only me. Have you guys all read the manga?
Yes.
Up to volume 13. I'm not completely caught up with
everything that has been published and released in America.
I guess I'm the only person that can say anything then.
Go ahead. All right. Let's hear
it. So, here's some guesses. I already know more about some of the Titan stuff, so I'm not going to say that end. But I predict that, A, we're going to get more turmoil with the higher-ups, and again, they're going to be colossal douches and completely screw everything over for everybody, as they always do, while the scouts try to move forward with things. I think we're going to actually see some real characters dying in the second season. I'm talking about characters that you've known for more than three episodes and aren't red shirts. We've known him for like five episodes, maybe. I think at this point we were connected to people a lot more than Marco. When Marco died the first time I watched, I was like, eh. But I think, although Mikasa, Eren, and Armin are definitely going to survive, they're going to go on a quest for the key. I don't think they're going to find it, though, for a long time. I think that's going to probably be a season 3 thing. I don't think they're even going to find it in season 2.
What do you think is in the basement?
I don't think we're going to find out.
Science!
But, yeah, just science!
Here's what I'm predicting, that at some point, and it's probably going to be a long time, we're going to go to Annie's homeland.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The Titan Shifters, where they come from, we're going to find it.
This is such a hard show to predict, though, because it really is off the wall. But just real quick before we wrap up, I do want to thank some of you guys who've been commenting on YouTube, because we do read all of them, even if we don't have the time to respond. MasterGamer98007, Mark W., The Young Genin Sasuke, Andrew Fedge, Lotto Azul, Jesse T, James Smith, Mary Rurua, Screaming Dean, Eva Beals, Wilkes Heine, Osgand, Steven Schumann, there's a lot of names. Tracy Martinez, you commented a bunch, wanted to thank you. Joss Cap, Joseph Ortiz, Titiana Ragland, Shot Rage, and then there are a bunch more of you. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah,
I just can't read off of everybody. But thank you guys so much.
I'm particularly fond of Baron of Hell.
Yes, but we do read all of your comments, so thank you guys. So once again, I'm Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein. That's KLEIN.
I'm Megan. You can follow me on Twitter at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin.
I'm John Quick. You can find me on Twitter at @NowQuick and The Legend of Korra After Panel. See you guys in an hour.
I'm Katie Cullen. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Kiaxe. That's KIAXET. I'm also on Sword Art Online and Z Nation.
And that wraps up Attack on Titan for this season. So next season can't come soon enough. Woo! Really, though. Really. See you guys next season. Yeah. Bye, guys. Later.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.